Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I was at the gym, and when I left the gym, I saw that I had like 60 notifications from this Telegram group that we're in where we share show prep topics.
Oh, boy.
Yes, because I responded to another co-host's messages regarding my topic.
So some lady in Texas voted illegally, and that's somehow an invasion or something.
No, oh my God. Here we go again. What is this going to be, Troll Heather Day? Is that what you're doing?
No.
Why don't we just go into the story?
Right. I'm giving you a segue to get into reading the story.
So yeah, but you're bringing up stuff that Ian argued.
Like, I don't know what Ian argued.
Yeah, you obviously do, because you just quoted some stuff.
No, I saw the headline that you shared about some kind of invasion, and you mentioned something about the lady voting illegally.
Yes, some Mexican citizen came into this country and pretended to be an American citizen, fraudulently, like, created an ID pretending to be an entirely different person, and stole her identity and voted in several different elections
like
in order to
theft.
Influence the outcome of policy that is influenced on American people. Which group should take precedence? America's most forgotten men and women may be the legal immigrants who acquire their visas, scale no barriers, and patiently await their green cards and citizenship ceremonies. Amid the raging DACA debates, the fugitive city outrages in this week's Honduran caravan epic at the San Diego-Tijuana border, these overlooked individuals ring America's doorbell rather than pry open the back entrance. So I am stunned, says Nayla Rush, a senior researcher with the Center for Immigration Studies. She is staggered by the caravan members who waved Honduran flags atop America's border fence. U.S. authorities arrested 29 of them for illegal entry. Those fleeing Tegucigalpa's chaos have no right to barge into the U.S. Likewise, if El Salvador, Guatemala, and Nicaragua, contiguous to Honduras and nearby Mexico, feel no duty to welcome these migrants, why is it America's obligation? So I'm curious to what your thoughts are on that, Chris.
Well, there's a couple things in reference to why people are coming here. Number one, we have minimum wage laws, and that really puts a kibosh on certain types of jobs that we make illegal for U.S. citizens.
Are you one of those people that likes to compare immigration to somebody coming in your backyard, for example?
I mean, sure. There's some similarities in terms of proper, like, ownership and who has, you know, what rights. Essentially, you are like the state to your own property, right? If you get to deem the rules, even if you don't believe in the state as, like, even if you don't believe the state should exist, you can still acknowledge the similarities in structure, whereas the state sets the rules for the land that it deems it, you know, runs, whereas the person sets the rules for their home. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, in that case, would you understand the difference between I as an individual owning a house and a collective of over 330 million people owning an entire landmass?
I understand each one as an individual concept.
And that neither you nor I have any direct authority over the border? So therefore, it wouldn't be up to us to control our property?
I mean, it's kind of how much faith you have in the system. I mean, you're basically, if you have no faith in government, be it your, if you have no faith in your own family, you're not going to trust them to do what, you know, they're supposed to do.
Do you think that if I cross an imaginary line in the sand, I should be shot or I should go to jail? What should happen to me?
Do I think you should? I mean, yeah, if I own property and someone came on my lawn and I wanted to shoot them, that'd be my right.
So do you think it's okay if somebody tries to hop over the Canadian border, for example, and ICE shoots them since they were trespassing?
I think if I were to hop over some foreign border and be like, you know, stepping over their borders and I got shot, it would be my own fault. And I think they would
it's worth dying. I would say it's worth that person's life.
I'm saying that that's what's going to happen. I mean, there are borders set, whether or not you agree with it. I mean,
well, I'm not asking how it is. I'm asking.
Yes,
is,
I think
that okay?
if I were to cross someone else's border, they would have every right to shoot me.
How about other countries that have very fluid borders? I mean, what do you think of that?
That's their decision. If that's what
people
the people over there agree to
forth,
do, and that's how they function peacefully, sure.
Sometimes they work in one country and they go back home to another. I mean,
if you come here though, and there's rules and stuff set, like, you know, I don't know.
But that I wasn't party to.
I'm not responsible for anybody's actions but my own. There's a quote. It says, "What I can't understand is the arrogance, the defiance of these people," referring to the ones that hop the border. "I could comprehend someone wanting a better life, sneaking in, and if caught, feeling apologetic. But these people are marching in front of cameras, in front of the whole world. They demand to be admitted here. Where does this sense of entitlement come from?" Rush came to America from an off-bloodied land, Lebanon. But rather than ford the Rio Grande, Rush did something rarely discussed these days. In 2011, she requested a visa online, spoke with diplomats at America's embassy in Beirut, and within 3 weeks received her papers. Current visa applications cost $1,140 plus $85 for biometric services for those between the ages of 14 and 78. Legal fees to get you through the process obviously vary depending on the attorney and how much work has to be done, explains Ira Melman of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Some people obviously do it themselves. Rush reckons that she spent over $3,000 on her immigration case and waited 3.5 years between securing her green card and becoming a citizen.
So we're talking about a substantial financial outlay to come here.
Right. And I've known people that were in the process of getting their citizenship that had been here for a decade and spent upwards of $20,000.
While the State Department evaluates these 4,060,046 applications, untabulated numbers of additional requests percolate overseas. Among those who arrived here on visas, some 13.2 million held green cards in January of 2014, according to a June 2017 study by the U.S. Office of Immigration Statistics. Of these, 8.9 million were eligible for citizenship after 5 years, typically, or just 3 for spouses of U.S. citizens. As of December 31st, 2017, there were over 165,000 green card holders who have filed paperwork for naturalization and await decisions, says the Center for Immigration Studies.
Does that center say how long they're going to wind up having to wait? Does it say
what their
legal fees are going to be
while they do
wait?
Eligible citizenship after 5 years are typically just 3 for spouses.
Right. And I'm still not hearing how we're going to get the crops picked in this country. You know, that's my only question. How are you going to get the crops picked?
Okay, we can create immigration processes that are easier for, you know, if we were to put if we need immigrants and those jobs are advertised, people will come work them. And if there's immigrants.
So HB2 work visas, that the number of them was just reduced. And we actually covered a story a couple of weeks ago about how the crab industry in Maryland is now basically about to collapse because they can't find people to wind up processing the crabs.
There's millions of people waiting to come into this country that you could offer those jobs to.
Apparently, a Maryland congressman says that federal immigration officials have agreed to increase the number of seasonal guest worker visas by 15,000, which means you should be able to wind up getting your Maryland crab cakes again, because it looks like that industry is not going to collapse after all.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure about that because H-2Bs are non-agricultural.
But see, that's a perfect example of how, like we can have these conversations. Like, oh, well, these farmers need X amount of jobs. Perfect. Like, you know, I know Americans would be like, hey, like, let's not let, you know, this farmer have their workers so that we can all pay $20 for a head of lettuce. You know,
actually,
what I mean?
There are people that say that.
I'm gonna say that's a matter of opinion.
That there was legislation in Georgia a few years ago that basically wound up causing all of the farm workers to leave. The farmers then went and asked the Department of Prisons to send inmates to come pick the crops, And the inmates, after one day, said, yeah, I would rather go to solitary confinement than go back to the farm.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that. And that's the whole thing. We're not talking about migration when we talk about farmers. And when we talk about that, what we're talking about are
seasonal
workers, but 82% of U.S. farm workers, 82% of all people who farm were born in a different country.
My issue isn't Israel. It's not Palestine. It's my backyard. It's this first and foremost, it's my family. Then it's my community. Then it's my state. Then it's my country. Like, you got to start locally and, like, you know, work on the things in your own backyard before you can, like, you know, if you really want to make a difference, ultimately.
And meanwhile, Americans think that rules don't apply to them when they go to other places. Article from the BBC talking about the number of Americans that are illegally in Mexico. Of the 738,000 Americans that are living in Mexico, 60,000 are in the country illegally.
What?
Yeah.
Kick them out. Get rid of them.
I don't care. Mexicans can lock them up. If freaking Americans are stupid enough to do and go break another country's laws, it's their own fault.
As happens with a lot of the people that are in this country illegally, they've overstayed visas, a lot of them.
Right.
One story here is a woman who immigrated legally to Mexico. She got a job. They filed all the paperwork. She took a second job. That company failed to file any paperwork. She said, are you sure you don't have to file paperwork? They said, oh, yeah, we're good. We're good. Turns out, no, not so good.
There's this woman here in Kalamazoo that is actually taking the sanctuary in church downtown. Her name is, and I'm probably going to botch this, Sahida Parveen Nadeem. And she's from Pakistan. She's been in Kalamazoo for 13 years. And her work primarily has been helping refugees and, you know, people like that. But and she's got a son attending the local university as well. And she is now has to take sanctuary in a local church in order to keep from being deported. And the church and the community is supporting her. The church actually has a sign on the door that nobody's allowed in without a search warrant. And, I mean, it's really kind of a messed up situation. She's been here for 13 years. She's been a productive member of society, has a child going to the local university, and yet if she leaves the church, she has the threat of being deported back to Pakistan.
Now what happened? Like, her work thing expired?
I really don't know. I mean, I caught it on the local news, and I was reading a little bit about it.
Based on what I was skimming as far as articles, it sounds like the reason she went to Kalamazoo is because the children, the daughter who has passed away and the son that's currently alive, were attending school at Western Michigan, which is there in Kalamazoo. So she went where her kids were.
Right.
Okay, yeah. All right, I guess that makes more sense. They didn't say that on the news. I didn't know if they, because, I mean, she's been here for 13 years. They're right. Going to school based on what's called the Kalamazoo Promise. Kalamazoo is the first place in the nation that actually a private organization actually promised that anybody that graduated from their schools actually got free tuition.
Right.
And it was kind of original, and I liked the idea because it was a private organization that actually came through with the Kalamazoo Promise. But, you know, she's been here for 13 years, so maybe that's the reason why it was the Kalamazoo Promise. I don't know, but in the same sense, you know, I think it's pretty ridiculous to be stuck in that. On the news, I forgot if it was last night or this morning, they actually showed this little apartment that's like in the basement of the church. She barely has a window to look out. I saw her pleadings on the news, and, you know, she says that this is her home. She loves this place. And the whole thing about the visas, you know, before anybody can pass judgment on who can be here legally and illegally, why not? You don't know what a person goes through unless you walk a mile in their shoes. And so me having been legally, you know, born here on the landmass known as the United States, I'm a legal citizen, so it's not anything I have to worry about. What does a person have to go through to come here? And likewise, what does a person have to go through to leave?
Though my thing is I don't want America turning into the type of nation that people need to flee from. And that's the only reason I think that we should have some standards of entry.
Oh, I thought you were going to say some standards for government.
No, like standards of entry. Like, I want good people like her to be able to come here. I think that's like a good thing. But at the same time, you have to understand these people are fleeing countries. And the problem we need to be asking is, why did their country turn to what it is that people need to flee from, and so that we can prevent that from happening on American soil? Where there's war, people flee, you know, where there's bomb being dropped, people flee, where there's violence, people flee. And it's sad, and, you know, like, I want to help as many people as we can, but at the same time, like, I'm also being, you know, aware of the fact that I don't want that to happen here in America, and I think it's a perfectly...
Really?
You know,
I mean, you really think that'll happen?
It can, absolutely.
After 250 years,
it's,
you know,
possibility.
We've had immigration from countries all over the world over our entire history. And all of a sudden, it's the great brown threat that the Mexicans who come up here do the jobs we are forbidden from offering to Americans.
It has nothing to do with brown or white. I don't know why you brought that up.
It certainly does.
Dodger, any final thoughts?
Doesn't the Statue of Liberty say, give me your tired, your poor, you know...
Your huddled masses.
Your huddled masses yearning to be free. And really, the immigration policies, in my opinion, over the last 100 years have become crap, because this is the world's melting pot, or at least I thought it was supposed to be. And yet we secure our borders and don't want, you know, make it damn near impossible to let new people come in here.
War has come into the discussion, and I say that gun control is the way to war. That in fact, taking away the individual's power, which is what you're doing when you're taking that barrel of a gun from the individual and putting it in the hands of the government and the army and the police, and you're making it much easier for the powers that be to start wars. And they still, you know, have to indulge in fraud and deception in order to get us into wars. Almost every, you know, large conflict that the U.S. has gotten itself into has been a subterfuge that causes all kinds of problems. And it's, you know, all lies. It's all disgusting. And you know, and people, you know, that's why 100 years ago, the banksters figured out, well, you know, we've got to learn to control the press. I actually wish to go back to the arrangements of everybody being armed and trained as a militia.
Right.
And
at the state level is fine with me.
You know, at the local level, this is a local thing. And that, you know, if we have attackers, we're ready.
Yeah.
Will be ready. That's what Switzerland has.
Well, I mean, you've got to realize how many attacks we have had on our shores over the last 100 years, and that's why we... Oh, wait.
None.
Hold on. None?
We
were just saying immigration was an attack.
Two.
What?
We had the Japanese did fire some bombs on Oregon.
No,
right?
I'm talking about Pearl Harbor and 9/11.
Well, Pearl Harbor.
Were attacks on American soil.
There was a bombing in 1993, too.
Those were basically both arranged.
I enjoy my standard of living. And if we have open borders, there is a possibility that people coming from countries that have a much lower standard of living than we're used to may create a different standard of living and possibly create an atmosphere that is dangerous. Like in Mexico, can I drive a car down in Mexico in the middle of nowhere? I would probably never do that unless it looked like a piece of junk pickup truck or something. And still, that may not be something I would ever do. But in America, I don't even think about ever getting shot or hijacked. Now, you know, and of course, some municipalities or something. But in general, you know, I feel relatively safe here. And I feel like the water is relatively safe to drink. And I feel like, you know, I can go use the bathroom. And even in the nastiest of gas stations, they still flush. I mean, I'm not saying that we should not have any immigration at all. It just needs to be controlled. Now, how do you control it? I don't think this current system is working the way it should. I think it's very discriminatory, especially towards people that truly should come to our country. And, you know, but at the same time, it does prevent a lot of people from being able to come here that I think shouldn't be here.
I've been in some big cities, and I've spent some time in Denver, which has a pretty decent size Hispanic. I would say it's a Hispanic ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for lack of a better word, that's what it is. And when I moved up here from Pennsylvania, there was a small town called York Springs that had tons of apple orchards. And if you drove through that town in Mexico, in the summer, during the season, it looked like a Mexican fiesta every day. It looked like parades were literally going down the street. Every store in this, like, couple thousand people in this town, you know, brightly colored, you know, everything in Spanish. And that's the way it was about, you know, half of the year. And that was...
What's the problem?
There was no problem.
Yeah, and nobody has any issue with people coming into this country that respect our standards.
They don't respect our standards. They come here illegal and they do a job.
I don't care if Hispanic people want to come to America and, you know, live and have their fiestas and stuff like that. That's fine as long as they're respectable people that aren't trash. Like, and I'm sorry, but we don't want scummy people coming here.
I don't want my property values to go down because I have a Hispanic neighbor that thinks it's Mexico, that's never been to the United States, knows nothing about our own culture, and doesn't take care of their property, and then devalues the entire neighborhood.
But then your property taxes go down.
I also have another story, which we may want to touch on, that says a man calls his girlfriend Yanni during sex and swears he said Laurel.
No, so we are not talking one? About the
That was a meme. Like, that wasn't... That's no. not what the whole thing was about, though.
I know it. That's a joke about the meme. Get it?
Yeah.
Okay. So every few months, and since you mentioned it, and now I want to stab you in the eyeball.
Yanni.
Every few months, there's some stupid thing that breaks the internet. Is it a blue dress? Is it a gold dress? What color's this shoe? Is this person saying Yanni? Is this person saying Laurel?
Well, we all
it's
just
absolutely
in
stupid arguments. And then instead of whoever, you know, posts the thing saying, here's what it actually is, people on the internet freak out.
I know. Isn't it fun?
No. I've got better stuff to do.
For everyone but you, Daryl. Everyone. And I do mean everyone but you.
I'll have to ask our Friday night Chris, who doesn't, even though he builds computers,
yeah, you're
he
just...
doesn't use the internet,
yeah,
really. So I'll ask him if he thinks it's fun.
He'll be fascinated by it. I'm confident in that. Patent trolls, as it's commonly used, are people or companies who will purchase patents and then attempt to sue anybody who uses what they believe or they think they can prove in court that patent covers. And they'll say, you know what, Apple and Samsung have been going back and forth on this stuff for years. you made your phone designed more or less to the shape of the iPhone. Therefore, Samsung, you owe us $10 million.
Yeah. Apple claims to own, and so far they've not used this patent outside of the electronics field, but they claim to own all rectangles with rounded corners.
Yes.
I would love to see Apple try to sue Australian rules football and professional hockey.
Yeah. So that's the definition of a patent troll. Now, the question really becomes whether the people that EFF went after, which is personal audio, really are patent trolls, or whether at some point they did have a patent that was worthwhile. Back in 2013, personal audio began sending legal demand letters to numerous podcasters and companies like Samsung in an apparent attempt to cajole them into a licensing deal, lest they be slapped with a lawsuit. Scott Peterson, the Broward County Sheriff's deputy, who failed to engage the Parkland High School shooter, he got what he deserved, is eligible to receive an annual pension in excess of six figures. Wait, that can't be right.
No.
No, that is right. Yeah, so this guy who failed to save lives,
you read that correctly, then yes. That's right. If by right versus wrong, then no.
Yeah, so this guy hangs out outside, stays where it's safe, and basically gets summarily fired for that. And his punishment is going to be able to retire with an annual salary of $104,000 a year. Pretty good, huh, Heather?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
All in a day's work.
Mm-hmm.
After 25 years in service, a law enforcement employee like Peterson would have earned a pension equal to 75% of the average of his five highest paid years during his final 10 years of employment. Under Florida law, pension payouts are capped at 100% of this figure, known as the, quote, final annual salary.
All right.
This specific situation sheds light on the broader implications of public retirement costs in Florida and around the country. An employee like Peterson, who was, by all accounts, a typical deputy in the Broward County Sheriff's Office before his unfortunate rise to national prominence this month, is afforded a retirement package that kicks in at age 52 and allows him to collect a pension even if he pursues other work after his retirement. It's vastly different from what most private sector workers can expect to receive. The difference is premised on the idea that Peterson put his life on the line in a high-risk profession, except, of course, that Peterson did not put his life on the line when the moment arose.
Right, and I've seen these lists that come out every couple of years showing, you know, what are actually the most dangerous jobs, and it's things like logger, Alaskan crab fisherman.
Going to comment about that deputy's pension thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
That guy, and if you figure it out to monthly, break it down to a 40-hour work week, he is going to be making $54 an hour that the taxpayers have to fund now.
Yep.
That is crazy.
Yeah, the recent article here mentions the monthly payment is going to be $8,700 per month.
Yeah, that is nuts. How can you even spend eight grand a month when you're retired? You know, that is crazy. We had a similar situation here in town.
Mm-hmm.
We're just a little 33,000 population city. Our city clerk when she retired, it turned out that she was getting paid $109,000 a year to be our city clerk.
Yep.
And all she had to do was manage the voter records and the run the elections when they come up.
Nice.
When she retired, they replaced her with a part-time city clerk that was going to be paid $20,000 a year.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.